from St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. Donna Behringer has been a staple of St. Louis government and politics for more than two decades. She served as an alderwoman for the city's 16th ward, which encompassed southwest parts of St. Louis. And in 2017, she began an eight-year stint as a member of the Missouri House. After unseating longtime comptroller Darlene Green last year, Behringer now plays a major, major role in the city's key financial decisions. And she's also had to play a major role in the city's recovery from the May 16th tornado and longer-term issues around pay for city employees. Behringer joins us in studio to talk about her transition into the comptroller's office and her vision for the state's financial future. Madam Comptroller, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you for having me.
And as a disclosure, Comptroller Behringer was my state rep and my alderwoman for many years before I shamefully absconded to St. Louis County. You are the first St. Louis comptroller in roughly 30 years who was not named Darlene Green. Mm-hmm. So what was your transition into this office like, given that the leadership hadn't changed throughout a pretty large span of time?
It was a whirlwind. I can tell you that right now. The big difference, and so I want to explain that now, is that the Office of the Comptroller, all the employees are civil service. And what that means is that there are no exemptions. And when the mayor won her race, she got to appoint everyone in all the departments because they were under her in her cabinet. So that's not to say it's good or bad. What it is that there was within the office, there were people that were used to the way things were. And I came in and I wanted to update us, especially via technology. So I was paperless. And that was kind of difficult for some people at first because they were used to printing emails. That's, yes.
Yeah. Printing emails.
Printing emails.
Okay.
Yes.
Continue.
So, and I'm the opposite. I don't like paper. I prefer to put everything on my iPad. And then I can go over reports and I can write on them with my iPencil. And then when I go into meetings, I have everything right there with me. So that right there was a big change.
Now, before we talk about some of those changes, I think it's important for our listeners to know what the comptroller actually does and what she's responsible for. So what are your key duties now that you're in the citywide office?
So we are in charge of all the money for the city of St. Louis. So when it comes to contracts, when it comes to paying people who get those contracts, when it comes to bonding, like going out for the airport and getting bonding, we are the office that does that. And all the accounts receivables and accounts payable are done through us for the entire city, not just our department. So we see the financials for every single department across the entire city. We work with over 10,000 vendors from all those different departments that need to be paid. And that is the, I call the accounting side. The other side would be development and real estate. All assets in the city of St. Louis are under the comptroller's name. So every port lease, every building that's under the city, the LCRA, if they want to sell the properties, I have to sign off the deeds. So the real estate as well. And so when we're going to develop a property and it's going to be using an asset that's under the city, I have to sign off on that asset before it can be sold. So it has two different things going on there.
What are some of the major changes you've been able to implement since you started the job last year? Have you given all of your employees like an iPad that they can write on, or are they still printing out emails at this point?
No. So what happened was is that the day I started, I had two stacks of contracts in my office that were almost as tall as I am because they only did wet signatures. And what that meant was is that we were the paper, I don't know how many trees they would go through a week. So we have a program called Oracle, and we were able, it took from the day I started, and we rolled it out completely the second week of December for the entire city. So every department has to use Oracle, which means everything is on the computer. So if you don't know where your invoice is, let's say you're a nonprofit and CDA has made you, given you a grant for $250,000, you want to draw down that $250,000, we first would have to set the account up, and then we'd have to pay the invoice that's submitted by CDA. The problem was is that no one knew where anything was because it was paper. And the contracts have to go through 7 different departments. You didn't know which department was in. And then when it finally hit the comptroller's office, it had one thing wrong on it. It had to start all over again.
Wow.
And that, it took,
That makes my head hurt, even just you explaining
that. Yes. It took up to 3 to 4 months minimum to get, you know, these contracts set up and get them open so people can draw down on the invoices, the contracts. And so we finally rolled it out. And what happened was, which is what we wanted to happen, is that now we were able to put contracts into the system and get them approved in 7 days. And now if you are a nonprofit and you have submitted your invoice to the department that's supposed to submit it to us, we are doing it within 1.5 days paying you.
Was this in motion before you got elected, though? Because you mentioned it started in December, so I imagine that like you didn't just come in and start this process before you got elected.
Yeah, I apologize. When I say it, we rolled it out in December, I meant this year, December 2025.
Got it.
Oracle had already been used for doing payroll.
Okay.
However, there wasn't a process put into place that trained all the employees, and that's why when they rolled it out, it kind of blew up.
Got it. Now, we haven't mentioned the other aspect of your job that makes you, at times, the most powerful city official in the entire city of St. Louis. You're on the board of estimate and apportionment.
Correct.
And if there is a disagreement between Mayor Kara Spencer and Board of Aldermen President Megan Green, you basically have the tie-breaking vote on key financial decisions. And how does that feel to be that potentially influential? And more importantly, have there been instances where there has been a disagreement and you've had to make the key decision?
That hasn't happened yet. I'm sure it'll happen in the future because it's always happened with every mayor that there's going to be 2 that are for and 1 against. But what I can tell you is that I see contracts. Not only do we first go through ENA. So if you want a contract with the city, you go through ENA and we have to vote on it. And when I was starting to look at these contracts, I was seeing things that were making me feel uncomfortable. And one of the things that made me feel uncomfortable is no risk assessments were being done for some of these nonprofits. And so I said, I want us to make sure that we're not putting contracts to people who can't actually deliver because they either don't know how to do a business plan or they haven't had a business plan. They don't know how to write grants or do the reporting on grants. So we put that in place. So I know that anyone who sits on ENA, whether it's the mayor or the present board of aldermen, knows that my first look is the financials. Is this in the best interest of our city? Are we doing it the best way we can? Is it a good reason to spend money or not a good reason? And we have those conversations.
I do want to talk about something that you were more involved in than people may realize, and that's the entire saga over the Alfred Montgomery ouster as sheriff. Can you talk a little bit about what your role was in that situation? Because I know that there was an audit that I think your office put out, but I think that it was more than just an audit, and I think it's important to put the sunlight on your office about how you got entangled in that very high-profile web.
Okay. So in the city of St. Louis, we do our budget. And when we do our budget, every department is given the dollar amount that they get for the year, the fiscal year. What had happened was is that we allow someone, a department, to go up to that dollar amount that they have set for their budget. But then once they go over it, then it has to be approved. So what had happened in the case of the sheriff's office is that they had let go of, I think, 12 civil service employees whose jobs are guarded and protected. You can't just fire them. You have to have cause. And then you also have to pay out their pension, their deferred comp, their sick leave, their vacation. And so when that happened, that was almost $500,000. So we were having the budget hearings right after I came on, and the sheriff was asking for more money, but everyone said, well, you already have this many more months before you get your next chunk of change. And so we, as the person who oversees the money, if you've gone past what you're approved to have in money, we cannot write more checks for you. So what happened was is that I had to tell the budget committee that the sheriff's office had already gone past what they're allowed to in the budget by 500,000, and that here is why. And I gave them the numbers because we keep the books. Mm-hmm. And I showed here is how much has been spent. But then something interesting then came up from there. Well, then how did he pay for the Tahoe? And I said, I don't know. So I went to my accounting people and found out that the sheriff, and this isn't the first sheriff, all previous sheriffs, they have private bank accounts. So when they have those sales, tax sales on properties, they put those in those private accounts. So that's where the money was being drawn down from for the Tahoe, the golf carts, the badges, the uniforms.
Now, you know, that's different from other county offices, because sometimes when somebody enters, say, recorder of deeds or elsewhere, they can hire whoever they want. They could fire everybody else.
Yes.
And it, you mentioned you didn't think one was good or bad, but is it possible that maybe like the county offices need some sort of standardized way they hire people? Like they either have to be mostly civil service and maybe a few that are exempt or all exempt? Because it seems like having this jumbled system is probably not great for the city.
Well, it's not. And I tell people, I said, our problem isn't that we can't find people to work for the city. The problem is that certain jobs, if they're civil service, they pay less than the other positions. There's three types of employees in the city of St. Louis. You got civil service, you have exempt, which is usually your at will, you know, they're appointed, and then you have your county offices. And they all are on different pay scales. They all can do whatever they want, but the civil service employees have to follow very, very strict guidelines set forth by the personnel department. And sometimes they're just not doable, and it's unfair.
We need to take a quick break, but when we return, we will have more of our conversation with St. Louis Comptroller Donna Berenger. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
Welcome back to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. We now return to our conversation with St. Louis Comptroller Donna Berenger, and we have a phone call from Eric from St. Louis who has a question about something that you may in the future decide on.
I wanted to thank Comptroller Berenger on her great public service. As a small business person working in the city for 50 years, it's been a real pleasure. And I wanted to know your thoughts on the Rams money and if it has been, if there's any settlement on that, where it's going to be spent, and if not, your thoughts about where it could be sent and what else you've done to improve your office, which I'm sure you've done a number of things based on who you are.
Well, thank you for calling. I appreciate it. And actually, the Rams money is one of the reasons I ran for this office in general, because I was up in Jefferson City and we had the Build Back Better funds. We had ARPA funds. I saw all this money being funneled into the city of St. Louis, but I didn't see it getting spent. I didn't know where it was going to be spent. And I knew that this is once in a lifetime and you have to be very careful about how you spend the money. And right now, what I did for the mayor was I pulled a report that showed we had $126 million still unspent in the ARPA funds. And so we need to make sure those are spent down first, because that bucket of money goes away on December 31st. And so when people ask me about the Rams money, I say we have to be very careful how we spend it. If we spend the principal, we should always spend the interest and use it to leverage to get other money. Use it as matches for federal money, as state money. But we need to make it so it is used in a wise manner that promotes our city and grows our city.
On another topic that I think is top of mind among the city is the future of the St. Louis Police Department. It has been about a year since a state board was placed back on, because there was a state board before the mayor's office had control over it. The appointees from Governor Kehoe were just approved, I believe, a week or so ago. There is talks about giving police officers raises of about 7%, which I understand is going to take a little bit of time to figure out what that means and how they get implemented. What do you kind of make of the first year of having a state board? Because it's controversial among city officials. A lot of people do not like the aspect of it being there. They don't like the lack of autonomy. But I think you kind of have a unique perspective because you represented a lot of people in the southwest side of the city who wanted a state board. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested, like, how do you think it's been going so far with all the voluminous backdrop I just mentioned in that question?
Well, the 7% pay raise in and of itself, we know our officers need to make more money. There's no question there. So what other people don't realize, because all the assets are under the comptroller, is that we have to turn over the assets to the state. And we are working through that right now. And that's no easy task because we did take out bonds for the police headquarters. So we have to we owe the bondholders. So that's something we have to work out. It's a legal issue. It's I know people think it's all happening quickly, but it doesn't. It's going slow. So we do it correctly and we don't get in trouble.
What do you think would be the barometer for success? That was something I asked Governor Kehoe. And I think we're going to need to wait a few years before we see if this is successful or not. But like for you, what would that be?
Well, I have to tell you, I was actually in my office and all of a sudden I can see out the window coming down the street, like 20 young men jogging. And they were, you know, there's a police car in front with his lights on, police car in the back. And I went, oh, my gosh, that's a recruit class. And I think 20 is pretty large. Maybe it was 30. I apologize. But to me, that was a very good sign that we are actually getting more police officers on the street.
I did get a perception because this is an anecdote. I used to send my daughter to a daycare in the city, and I ran into somebody who worked for the St. Louis Police Department. And I asked him, what do you think of state control coming back? And he was pretty excited about it. Mm-hmm. And I think that was pretty common among the people there. But I do want to talk about the tornado recovery. There is a perception that it's going really slowly and not going fast enough. Do you think that perception is correct? Or do you think it's going as fast as it can, given how big the damage was?
What I can tell you is this would not be my first time working with FEMA. And FEMA came in Ellendale neighborhood that I represented as a state rep because of the flooding. And so I learned that FEMA is very clear on their rules. And if you don't go directly by the rules they set, they will not reimburse you. So we just finished up, literally just finished up some of the last legislation. The alderman, Brett Narayan, he did it.
Narayan,
I apologize. But that was 3 years ago. That was 3 years ago. Yeah. And so I tell people, FEMA goes slow as molasses, but you have to have everything correct. So I had accountants that did not take overtime, but worked nights and weekends after that happened. When everything was coming in, they were reviewing it to make sure it fell within the guidelines, made sure we were tracking it. I did something that hadn't been done. I have my email on my phone. You can get a hold of me at any time, anywhere, literally. And I was able to do what's called DocuSign. Mm-hmm. So when we had the emergency contracts that needed to like move the trees, do this. At 2 o'clock in the morning, they could send it to me and I could DocuSign it. So it was immediate. There was no holdup on getting money to get people out there to do what needed to be done.
But I imagine that one of the issues and why it hasn't gone faster is you have to make due diligence to make sure the contractors can actually do the job. If somebody bids for debris removal, and you review it and you're like, this company is not capable of doing this, then the whole process has to start over.
Correct.
Is that basically one of the problems here?
No. Actually, I think one of the problems is the just when it comes to rebuilding, right?
Yeah.
Different people have different ideas of what they want that to look like. But at the end of the day, you still have to follow the law. And the law says you have to know who owns the property and is it insured? And that has been the biggest hurdle to overcome because we have multi-generations living in a house, but the person who actually owns it is dead. And so we're cleaning that up in the courts. And then if you didn't have insurance, we're trying to get in there. Here, let me tell you what I did do. And this is something that didn't make the headlines, but I was so proud of my employees. And the reason this is full circle is because when I was in Jefferson City, I worked on the legislation for the vacant and abandoned properties in the city of St. Louis to be torn down. And then we put a $15 million match. So the city had to match the $15 million, and we gave $15 million from the state. We get a call the other day saying, oh my gosh, we still need to spend $7 million more, but we're not quite sure if we have it. My accountants had been tracking all of the teardowns on the properties. So we were able to match the funds. So now they've been replenished. Now we have another $15 million to tear down abandoned and vacant properties. And so we're also identifying those to make sure if they came down during the tornado, those funds could be used to actually remove that building because it complies.
In the last minute or so, I want to ask you a broader question, something I asked the mayor. I feel that if the city and the county were under one emergency management system, the immediate response to the tornado would have been a lot better because the county has a much more sophisticated and well-funded system. And if the city paid into it, maybe the sirens would have gone off. You've talked about consolidation between the city and the county for a while. Am I off base here?
No.
Maybe this is something that we should talk about more as far as like city and county having joint things they do with each other.
Yeah, I don't call it consolidation. I call it regionalism. And the reason I call it regionalism is because with the tornado didn't stop at the city line. It went right into the county. And if we had a city-county mutual agreement worked out, it would have been more efficient. Same with the health department. And people, anyone under 40 right now that comes into St. Louis says, what is wrong with you people? Why are you so separated? And I tell everyone that is why we're having an issue, a perception of us. But if we were one county, in other words, we just stayed the city of St. Louis, you know, all the municipalities stayed the same, but we came one county, we would start qualifying for hundreds of millions of dollars in federal funds because that money is based on our population. And right now, the county alone and the city alone does not qualify for all the money Kansas City, who does it through Jackson County. That's how they get their money. Jackson County applies for those funds.
Well, we will be talking about consolidation more, and we will welcome you back to be part of that conversation. Donna Behringer is the comptroller for the city of St. Louis. And before that, before she was elected last year, she served 8 years as a state representative and roughly 13 years as a member of the Board of Aldermen. Madam Comptroller, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Today's episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.